This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, for the fourth year in a row, the sitting premier of BC has addressed the attendees at the BC Natural Resources Forum in Prince George. The event witnessed a record attendance in 2026 with the aim of connecting various parties interested in and affected by resource development in BC's north. Ian Gregg at CFER Radio in Prince George has more. And grief can be a hard topic to talk about, but a new wind phone gives a space for people to honor loved ones and help process that grief. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo dives in. And as mining activity in Northwest BC increases, many at Rock Talk last week are asking, what is the Golden Triangle? Pam Hassan at CSK News in Smithers tells us more. I'm Dan Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CFER Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. The evening of January 20th, 2026, at the Downtown Civic Center in Prince George, Claylie-Tanay, BC Premier David Eby gave a keynote address to open the BC Natural Resources Forum. The event seeks to connect industry professionals, community and First Nation representatives, and relevant representatives from all levels of government with one another. For the fourth year in a row, Premier Eby has attended this local event. There, he outlined the importance of trade diversification and natural resource development, particularly within the mining sector, for the province and even the country's future. He elaborated on a few of the obstacles along the way. These ambitions, of course, affect northern BC. While the full-length address can be found on www.cfur.ca, CFER Radio presents the following summary.
Here. Last time I was here, I made a clear commitment to you. I said our government would be focused on economic growth, that we would work with you on responsible resource development, and that we would bring more certainty and speed and clarity to how projects move forward in British Columbia. I said that as times changed, and without doubt we are in changing times, that our government would change too. I said then, and I still believe today, the natural resource development is the key to how we will create the wealth that makes everybody better off in this province. I have absolutely no doubt but that BC's resources set us up to uniquely thrive in this rapidly changing world. The opportunities are exceptional and unique in British Columbia. I often point to, and I'm very proud of the fact, that we have four times more major private sector projects on the Government of Canada's major projects list than any other province in Canada. It's why I've been making the case across the country, including to the Prime Minister and to my colleagues around the Council of Federation table, the other premiers, that BC will be the economic engine of the new economy that we are building as Canadians. I know that you know it's true. Mining already employs more than 40,000 people in this province, and we, with the support of Artemis and so many others in this room, are going to grow that number dramatically.
With uncertainty looming over trade relationships with the United States, the Premier referenced ongoing trade negotiations domestically between provincial borders and also internationally with India, where some quickly growing provinces have a strong interest in mineral and energy resources. The strength of the demand is speculative, but the Premier made mention of some large numbers.
In the provinces that I was visiting, growth rates are between 8 and 10% annually, and the companies all expect that to continue for many years. We're going to be playing matchmaker between the promising opportunities here in British Columbia and these major companies. Last year, I committed to expanding markets and reducing reliance on any one trading partner without mentioning any names. We've worked hard to deliver on that. BC led the charge nationally to break down trade barriers across the country between provinces, and now companies can sell their goods, as long as it's not food or alcohol, across the country without barriers. The good news about the work that we chaired on that is that businesses can sell their products coast to coast now, and we're pushing hard to get Ontario to buy BC wine. I don't know what the issue is, but we're working hard on it. You know, I think that that this moment is one that's really focused the minds of a lot of people, and I would include our government in that group. The silver lining of the threats we're seeing from the president currently is that Canadians generally, and I think certainly British Columbians, and more than ever before, really recognize the crucial importance of the resource sector and the work that's done here to create wealth and independence for our country. And that is a shift, and it's a shift that I've seen in government itself. It's a shift that I've seen among just...
While these goals are ambitious, Premier Eby acknowledges some primary factors to address if the province is to succeed on this path, namely the supply of skilled workers, provincial relations with First Nations, and permitting speeds affecting industrial projects. First, Eby addressed the debate sparked over a recent court decision casting uncertainty over provincial land titles.
We're advancing agreements to build a North Coast transmission line in partnership with the Nechaco Nations. They'll join other First Nations in a partnership that will speed FID for $50 billion in private sector investment across the Northwest, which brings me to reconciliation, a hot topic I know here. Let me be very clear off the top. Repealing the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act or ending negotiations with First Nations, as some people have suggested, would not speed things up in this province. It would not reduce conflict, and it would not attract investment. In fact, it would be at high risk of driving away. The Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People is not an obstacle to development in this province. It's one of the reasons why some projects are moving forward. The concept of First Nations title wasn't invented by this provincial law. It's grounded in Section 35 of Canada's Constitution. That section and the courts have been clear. Indigenous title exists in British Columbia. Repealing the Declaration Act doesn't make title claims go away. Instead, it would remove the roadmap that we set out with First Nations about how to resolve these matters outside of court. It would bring us to more conflict in court, and it would slow projects down. But recently, the courts have weighed in with decisions that have they've created real confusion about what the Declaration Act is about and what reconciliation means in practice, and these questions have to be addressed. So I want to be very clear about the bright lines that our government will not cross. First, our opinion, my belief, is that reconciliation is the business of government-to-government relationships between the provincial government, the federal government, and First Nations governments. It is not for the courts to take over. And that's why we're going to amend the declaration this spring to make that intent explicit. Second, issues of private property. For our government, private property is non-negotiable. People's homes and businesses are not bargaining chips. Full stop. We will challenge court decisions, and we are challenging a court decision that blurs that line. But we cannot and we will not abandon our work to build lasting partnerships that support good jobs and benefit everyone. It is really the only path forward for this province.
Secondly, Premier Eby noted an approach to address the need for skilled workers in the province.
Making sure that people have the skills and the abilities to take the jobs that are being created by the folks in this room and by people in every corner of this province is absolutely crucial, which is why we announced we're doubling our investment in skilled trades training for the next decade.
This is in part reference to a $241 million fund announced November 14, 2025, that is to be invested in BC's trades training system over the next 3 years. But finally, Premier Eby expressed urgency over increasing the speed and clarity of the province's permitting processes.
Since 2019, we've been working hard to reduce mine permitting times. We've reduced them by about 35%. And it was last year that we worked with Centerra and we made extension of the mine life, their application that they were making to us a priority. And we piloted the second round of our concurrent application review and consultation process that was first deployed at Highland Valley Copper. It cut permitting time in half for that process. And I just want to walk you through what that means. It meant that in 2025, March 31st, Centerra initiated the process with us, and it was done in 10 months. I think our minds are focused, the leadership is there, and what we have to do is seize this window, which is why I'm obsessed with my team about permitting speed, about cutting down those times, about maintaining high standards, but getting to those permits in hand faster so that we don't miss this moment. That is a responsibility on us. Certainly on our partnership with First Nations governments and on proponents for us all to work together, that the materials come in on time, that we process them quickly, and we get moving, because going from concept to delivery is the window that we're in right now. It feels like it won't always be there.
It ought to be noted that areas of northern BC provide the setting for much of the activity referred to in Premier Eby's address.
What the North Coast Transmission Line delivers is not just electricity, it delivers certainty. It doubles the line between Terrace and Prince George. It builds in full backup power for the North Coast.
That's an electrical transmission project with BC Hydro. There's also the Clism's LNG project, as well as mineral projects.
Because of complex negotiations and years of this work with the mining sector building capacity, the Tahltan Nation and BC now share decision-making over Red Chris and SK Mine projects. In part, this is due to the roadmap to stay out of court and find paths forward working in partnership with nations, ultimately bringing more clarity for investment, jobs, and responsible development. And that clarity matters. Proponents know who they're working with, decisions are made closer to the ground, and projects can move forward with confidence. The Northwest is a section of the province that's going to see, that has seen, because of LNG Canada Phase 1, all the activity out of the Port of Prince Rupert, huge change and development. So we did the Northwest, the Resource Benefits Alliance Agreement, where we supported, I think it's about 20 local governments with additional predictable funding. That the mayors were championing for a while. I was very happy to deliver that crucial.
While Premier David Eby sees the trade dispute with the USA as a significant obstacle and a motivating factor to diversify trading partners, he did drop a note of optimism.
But we also know that the world around us is growing more uncertain. Global instability is reshaping markets. Trump's threats and tariffs are putting real pressure on Canadian workers and industry. The Prime Minister said just today, we are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. But I can tell you, there is nowhere else in the world I would rather be to face these challenges and these threats than right here in British Columbia.
And that concludes CIFA Radio's summary of the keynote address delivered by BC's NDP Premier David Eby on January 20th, 2026, at the BC Natural Resources Forum in Prince George, Claylie-Tanay.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a CIFA News Update. Grief can be a hard topic to talk about, and a new wind phone gives space for people to honor loved ones and help process grief. A wind phone is a non-working phone for people to use as a bridge between those who have passed and those who are still living as a way to process grief. The concept of a wind phone was developed in Japan when in 2011, Itaru Sasaki built a phone booth in his yard so he could connect with a deceased relative. Following a devastating earthquake and tsunami in the country, he opened his backyard wind phone for his neighbors and community to use to process the loss many have faced. In Nanaimo, a permanent wind phone has been installed at the Bowen Road Cemetery by the city of Nanaimo to offer those grieving a space of reflection and healing.
Well, I'm very aware that as a society that we're generally afraid to talk about death, and that those who are going through a grieving process don't feel like comfortable to openly talk about it. And then it's often something you do in private. And I really think that there's something to be said about supporting one another through the grief process and normalizing death and grief.
That was Carmen Lavoie, a social worker professor at Vancouver Island University. She was the one who initiated the project with the city. CHY met with her at the cemetery where the wind phone is located. As a professor, she has researched death, grieving, and how to talk about the difficult subjects. She says death and grief tend to be topics no one really wants to talk about.
So when I do bring the topic in, it can sometimes be a surprise for students, but also an aha moment. It's like, oh, right, that's actually something that's important to all of us, and that we do need to be having these conversations and talking about it and supporting people through that process.
She says when she first heard of Wind Phones, she thought the idea of the phones seemed like an easy way to support the community. She then went to the city of Nanaimo with the idea.
Because we do want to be there for each other, for those we care about at end of life, but oftentimes we don't even know how to do that. It can be kind of tucked away somewhere or in a hospital or out of sight, which is very different than how it used to be historically for a lot of folks.
The phone sculpture titled Waves was created by Nanaimo artist and designer Maru Dela Costa. Dela Costa told CHOI he got the inspiration for the design from the ripples drops of water leave.
A simple drop can affect a whole surface of water just with a tiny thing. And was kind of like that, how you put a message in your phone of your words and like expand it through the infinite.
He says he had his own personal connection to the design and installation.
In my last time with my father, that he was in Argentina, all my communication with him was by phone. So it was very represented for this project.
The installation also has a personal connection with Lavoie, whose late father's old phone is used in it.
My dad worked for Alberta Government Telephones, AGT, for his whole career, his whole life. That's where he worked. And over those many years, he collected many phones and would refurbish them and take care of them. And he'd save them for his children and pass them on. And he died about 2.5 years ago. And for me, knowing that there was this collection of phones, it really seemed like, what else could we do with them other than maybe have a wind phone? So the phone that's in there is one of the phones that he collected. It's an old wall phone, rotary, with a cord, and it's something he actually carved his initials in the bottom of, because that's how he handled his stuff all the time. Anyway.
Lavoie says there's no right or wrong way for someone to use the wind phone.
My only suggestion would be just to begin with visualizing that they are on the other line, that they are on the other end of that call, and just allow yourself to say what you need to say.
She says the experience can be very different for each person.
So children would maybe use it to talk about their friends and their homework to someone who's passed, and others might use it to say things that they never got a chance to say.
She says her hope for the wind phone is for grieving people to feel comfortable using it and to normalize feelings of grief and loss. The wind phone is located near the Howard Avenue entrance of the Bowen Road Cemetery. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This is CICK News. Ted Vanderwart, president of the Smithers Exploration Group, says this year's Rock Talk was one of the highest turnouts ever, with 97 delegates attending. He says the strong interest in exploration, particularly in BC's Golden Triangle, known as one of the province's most mineral-rich regions, is helping to drive attendance. Ted says the Smithers Exploration Group advocates for the minerals industry in BC while also hosting industry events and doing public outreach, including high school engagement and job fairs to highlight career opportunities in mining and mineral exploration. I attended Rock Talks both days this year, and the following are a number of interviews from different perspectives of geologists, industry workers, and associations that support the mining industry in this province. The Mineral Deposit Research Unit, or MDRU, partners with mining companies to conduct research that benefits both industry and academia. Through student-led research and fieldwork, the unit works directly in and around mining camps, contributing scientific expertise while giving students hands-on experience. The collaboration adds value to mining companies through applied research while providing real-world training and opportunities for students, creating a mutually beneficial relationship.
Hi, I'm Kate Rubing. I'm working at the University of British Columbia in the Mineral Deposit Research Unit. We're looking at the Hazelton stratigraphy and the deposits associated with those rocks. And so the Hazelton group, it's a particular age, it's a name given to a particular age of rocks, and that's rocks of the Jurassic. And so that's a time in history that's prevalent to mineral deposits.
When you're looking at stratigraphic studies of the Hazelton group, what are you learning about the Earth's history?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so we When we collect samples, we collect them for many different purposes. So we look at their, for stratigraphy, we look at their context with respect to each other. We can also get their chemical fingerprint. So we sample them for what we call geochemistry. And then that will tell us about the original like architecture of the system. So if we're in a subduction setting, basically an open basining environment, so a rift, it'll tell us about the crust, whether it's thin, whether it's thick, and we use that together with the type of rocks that we're seeing in different settings. It can tell us whether we're in a deep ocean or whether we're shallow marine. So there's a lot of unique, it's a combination of looking at the rocks themselves, so their physical volcanology and the textures that we can see, and then together with the chemistry it can tell you what was life like and how that impacts finding a mineral deposit. So you sort of need the perfect system to form, and that's why it's hard. You know, we use all these tools as geologists to look for different features, but it doesn't necessarily find you a deposit, because in order for it to be economic, it has to be of a certain size and a certain place in the crust that we can actually get to and mine. So we take into account all of these features. Yeah.
It's called the Golden Triangle. Can you kind of help me understand why that is such a mineral-rich area?
Yeah. So the Golden Triangle, so the name just comes from an area, like you said, of really well-endowed part of the crust. And why that's well-endowed is, like, part of it is related to the inheritance of the crust. So there's a major rift that runs up along the margin there through, and there's a series of deposits that are associated with that basin opening, and probably a series of basins. So we're developing favorable crust, favorable structures, and then obviously we have a magmas that are coming in at that same time as well. So throughout the Hazelton we have the several punctuated events of what we would call magmatic events. And so this would be part of these large intrusive activity throughout the Hazelton, and we see those mineral deposits within the Golden Triangle related to those events.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.